Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, April 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Passover's next week, and we have just the people in the studio to help you create some delicious dishes for the celebration. Rabbi Hanoch Hecht, who competed on the Food Network's Chopped Show, and Chef Brian Arnoff of Kitchen Sink Food and Drink in Beacon, New York, will be joining us. What can you add to that Seder plate beyond horseradish, matzah, and a shank bone? Well, we'll find out on this program. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. It's Food Friday. It comes up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's Food Friday, and Passover is next week, and we want to help you prepare the best-tasting dishes for the celebration. Rabbi Hanoch Hecht and Chef Brian Arnoff are in the studio to field your culinary questions. Rabbi Hecht co-founded the Rhinebeck Jewish Center and appeared on the Food Network's Chopped. Brian is the chef at Kitchen Sink Food and Drink in Beacon. I think he was on last fall with us, and he's on here for a repeat performance. Rabbi Hecht and Chef Arnoff, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It
is great to be here.
Nice to have you guys here. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to give us a ring. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Been doing this show a long time, and very rarely have I seen this much food on the table, so it's pretty impressive. What? First of all, Rabbi Hecht, what did you bring today?
Of course, coming up to Passover, there has to be a lot of food. I think that's why Brian and myself both thought we have to overload it. But of course, I brought you the traditional shmura matzah, which we'll hopefully get you a nice piece to taste.
Oh, yeah.
There are two types of matzah. There's a square matzah, and then there's the round handmade shmur matzah, and I brought you handmade shmur matzah. Can I ask you a question before we talk about
food? Sure, man.
On the website,
yeah.
So WAMC.org,
yeah.
It has a picture of the program. It has matzo bowl soup with noodles in it. That's a no-no for Passover.
Okay, you're right. Well, you know, you got to remember, first of all, Catholic, okay? Second of all, I'm like, I asked Ian Pickus, who is Jewish. I said, help me out here. I got to find a picture. And he said, well, I could take a picture of myself. And I said, that's not really what we're looking for. So I went to Wikimedia Commons, found a picture of, why didn't you tell me that before the show, Rabbi?
Anyways, I just saw it this morning. I figured that's the wrong picture to pick for Passover.
We're off to a flying start here. All right, so you brought
the handmade shmura matzah.
Okay, what else did you bring?
And then we brought you some gefilte fish with horseradish, and that's cool. The typical horseradish that goes on top.
Yeah.
We could discuss what gefilte fish is. Then I brought you a little bit. See, most people want to make you happy with food. I want to make you cry a little bit. So I brought
I'm going to cry in a moment, I think, at this point.
And I brought you some morar, which is the typical horseradish eaten at the Seder, and with some charoset, which is, I guess, the condiment that goes along with it. And I brought you some macaroons, because what's a Seder without a macaroon?
And I love macaroons. You had me at macaroons this morning with your first tweet. Chef Arnoff, what'd you bring?
Well, I brought the classic matzo ball soup, but we are doing a little spin on it down at the restaurant, and we're stuffing the matzo ball with an egg yolk. So we're going to pour the soup over the matzo ball for you here in a minute, and you're going to crack right into it, and out it's going to pour a nice soft egg yolk.
Well, that's cool. That's like a trick.
Yeah.
It's a magic trick. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rabbi Hecht, you were on the Chopped Show. What was that like?
Well, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. They put together a show of religious leaders called Leap of Faith. They had a rabbi, a nun, a pastor, and a monk. And that wasn't the beginning of a joke.
No, it sounds like it.
Pretty much. And we all went into the Chopped Kitchen together, and we competed. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me, both seeing that competition can be with love. And second of all, I'm a big believer that the food is a great equalizer. No matter what religion, background, or place a person is from, when you put good food in front of them, all of a sudden we have an interesting way of bonding together. And it was truly a wonderful, wonderful experience. I feel like I won, although I didn't leave a champion.
What'd you make?
Oh, it's so long ago. I don't know if I remember. But whatever they put in front of me, it's interesting that before I went onto the show, I told them that although maybe from the law itself, I can cook not kosher, it's not appropriate for a rabbi to go compete on national television, you know, a few million viewers, to cook not kosher. So if you give me not kosher, I'm just going to respectfully decline cooking
it.
And they were very, very good to me. They gave me all brand new pots and pans, and they all the ingredients were kosher ingredients. So they were very, very accommodating. I'm very, very grateful. I had a wonderful time, and I recommend that you watch the episode. You don't have to watch the show, but at least watch the episode.
Was it stressful?
No.
No?
Being here is stressful.
Oh, come on. I mean, Brian, you've been on the show before. It's pretty relaxed, right?
Very easy going. I mean, we got to get the champagne open. Then it's a little more fun.
I cannot believe you brought champagne.
We're celebrating a holiday.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll in the first break, we'll crack the champagne. Let's take a call in the meantime. 800-348-2551. And let's go to Joan in Albany. Joan.
Hi there. I just have to pose a challenge to you guys. This has been a problem for me for many years. I am vegetarian, and I also have a egg and dairy allergies. So when Pesach comes along, I love to cook. I cook for everyone else. I'm whipping egg whites galore, but I can't eat any of them. So I'm just wondering if the rabbi has any suggestions or recipes or pointers for someone who's got a dance around the egg problem on Pesach.
Well, that's such an interesting thing, but it's funny that the two staples of matzah and charoset you're allowed to eat, so I don't see why you would complain.
Of course.
You're a vegetarian, you don't eat eggs, and you don't eat, thank
dairy.
God you're not gluten-free as well.
Right. Sure, but are there any sources you can point me to that might have some interesting variations, things that I can do? I can't eat the gefilte fish either. I do eat some fish because I especially Passover, that's all I can end up resorting to.
If you eat fish, then you're able to make fish from scratch without eggs. I mean, there are a lot of different substitutes that take the place of eggs, and fish itself sticks together.
Right.
You put in a little bit of, chef would know better than me, but you put in a little bit of matzo meal and should stick together fine. If you don't want to use gluten, you go with, like, potato starch, which is common around the Passover season. Personally, all the fish that's made in our home, specifically for Passover, we make from scratch. We have our Bubby's recipe that we follow.
Good.
During the year, we'll buy the frozen stuff, but come around Passover, we would never make frozen. It's all made from scratch, so you could definitely make gefilte fish.
Brian?
Well, the one thing I would recommend is looking up aquafaba. It's a byproduct of chickpeas, and that can help you emulsify a lot of different things together and replace eggs.
That's assuming you eat chickpeas on Passover.
Say it again, Joan.
Could you spell that for me, what that is? I'm not sure I heard you.
It's aquafaba. A-Q-U-A-F-A-B-A.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Interesting. Yeah, right.
Not aquavelva, Joan. That's something else.
That's assuming you use chickpeas on Passover, because there's a very big difference between Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews. Ashkenazic Jews do not eat legumes on Passover, and Sephardic Jews do. Technically, a chickpea is a legume. But I always tell people, if it's the difference between keeping Passover and not keeping Passover, might as well eat legumes. But of course, if you're able to. One of the reasons why hummus, which is quite popular during the year on Passover, most homes do not have, at least Ashkenazic Jews.
Right. But I understand that there are dispensations about kitniot. There are some differences about that nowadays. And you know, so some of the traditional foods have changed a little in the recent rabbinical decisions. And I guess that's what I was hoping to get a perspective on. You know, I know conservative movement has gone a certain direction, but you guys have a new perspective. Aquasaba, I will look for that.
My opinion is very easygoing. If it's the difference between eating pasta or eating legumes, of course you should eat legumes. If it doesn't bother you to stay away from it for a week, it's not such a big deal. But quinoa is a big item now that everybody's eating, and all the opinions came across the board that quinoa is kosher for Passover, so you shouldn't have a problem with that either.
Well, Joan, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. And, of course, don't look at the website either, because the picture, it's a no-no. Martha in New York City. Martha, you're on.
Oh, hi. So I'm trying to have a vegan Seder this year, and I bought egg substitutes, and I see that it has leavening in there. Can I use it?
That's a very good question. Should I let the chef answer?
You go first, Rabbi.
The answer is, if there's a leavening product that would make the depending what you make, but it's a leavening product that comes from grain, then it is forbidden to use if one wants to follow the laws of kosher for Passover. Of course, if one is not so strict with it, technically you could use whatever you want. But there's no reason why. I guess it's a very, very if one is vegan, it's a very, very challenging holiday. But on the flip side is all vegetables and all the typical items that you eat throughout the year, you could eat on Passover. Just many some of the specialty foods that you remember your grandmother making, such as a brisket or gefilte fish, that you can't have. But there's no reason why you can't have all the other items that you typically eat.
Chef?
You know, this is
we're going to
really,
wake you up for the program.
This is not my area of expertise. I'm not the Judaic guy who knows the exact rules. I mean, I would jump in here and have a question for the rabbi just in terms of, you know, if we often we don't leaven anything on Passover, but why can we whip egg whites and use egg whites to leaven something? That was always something that as a chef I think about. I could go make a souffle for Passover if I really wanted to, because I could do potato starch, egg whites, and have a delicious souffle. But it
Absolutely.
Kind of seems counterintuitive.
All the homes that keep kosher Passover, that's exactly what they do. They use the potato starch and they whip up the whites of the eggs, and that's exactly what they do. The reason, the concept is when we talk about leavening, it's not any leavening product, but specifically from the five grains leavening. If some other item, such as eggs, is leavening through a different process, and I don't know all the chemical reactions because I'm not a chef, then it would technically be permitted.
All right, let's take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday with Chef Ryan Arnoff of Kitchen Sink Food and Drink and Rabbi Hanok Hecht. We'll be right back. 800-348-2551. We'll try some food.
Support for WAMC comes from Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York, featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients. Facebook.com/Roundhouse Bakery Cafe. Bread and Butter, located in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly. Breadandbutteramherst.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Silver Bay YMCA, Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, offering conference spaces, lodging, and family activities, silverbay.org. And Big Y, family-owned and operated with Big Y Express stations in Lee and Pittsfield, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com.
Took a little extra time because I was chewing matzah, you see. It's Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. Ray Graff here with Chef Brian Arnoff and Rabbi Hanok Hecht. And you at home, 800-348-2551. The matzah's great.
Oh, this is the ultimate cracker.
And so you made this?
I didn't make this. I bought this from the bakery.
You bought it from the bakery?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. But my family does make matzah. Our family tradition is, it goes back, I don't know, a long time. We go to a matzah bakery in Brooklyn, and we rent this facility out for the day, and we make a few hundred pounds of matzah for all our extended family.
Wow. I mean, how long does it take to make a few hundred pounds of matzah?
Well, matzah itself, it's longer than 18 minutes. It starts to rise. It's less than that, but you're doing quite a few batches. The ovens in a typical matzah bakery is about 1,400 degrees.
So it's like a pizza oven almost.
It's very similar to a pizza oven, just a lot hotter. I think, what degree the pizza...
800-900 degrees.
Really? Even a wood fired?
Yeah, maybe a little higher, to 1,200. You guys are firing in a toaster oven or?
No, it's similar to a pizza oven.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a gentleman in Red Hook. He's a Syrian guy that owns like a little pizza shop, and he builds. He's like one of the top experts in building matzah oven.
Oh, you're kidding me?
Yeah.
All right, let's have a little toast here. I guess, Rabbi, you're not going to.
No, I cannot drink with you. I'll toast with you.
Okay.
L'chaim.
So, L'chaim. Boy, I don't think I've ever had champagne on the program. Very nice. What is that, Brian?
This is local champagne. It's a cuvée, so that's a blend of Chardonnay grapes and Pinot Noir grapes produced right here in the Hudson Valley from White Cliff Vineyards.
Nice. It's very good.
Smells very nice.
It's very excellent. Let's go back to the phones. I'll have another sip. 800-348-2551. Let's go to JJ in Kingston. JJ, you're on.
Hello. So I'm calling you to figure out how to make a good frosting because I make the cake, but I can't figure out how to make a good frosting.
A cake on Passover? I hope it's not using flour because then we'd have a problem.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Frosting's really easy. Just soften some butter, whip some powdered sugar into it, and add some flavoring, vanilla, melted chocolate, and you have a really simple homemade buttercream frosting.
And kosher for Passover. Butter is kosher for Passover. You use margarine, and it comes from soy. You have the same question as before, the kidney yolk.
So use butter. Well, that's always a good rule of thumb anyway.
Yeah, probably.
It is a Food Friday. Thank you, JJ. We appreciate it. Let's go to Mordecai, and Mordecai is in Woodbridge. You're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. A simple call. I just want to find out intrinsically what would be the difference between my eating matzah on Passover versus taco shells, because taco shells don't involve any kind of leavening either.
That's a very, very good question. Chef, could you first explain how taco shells are made?
Come closer to the microphone, bud.
Well, are we talking about corn or flour taco shells?
Corn.
Well, I think the rabbi would tell you you're probably not supposed to eat corn on Passover, but taco shells are generally made just with either corn flour or wheat flour mixed with a little bit of fat and water. They're quickly kneaded and then cooked on a griddle.
So technically, if you do it in less, let's assume that you used flour, if you did it in less than 18 minutes, technically it's okay. The only thing I want to mention is if you're buying flour from the store, regular flour is already, when they the process of making the flour, they actually wash down the flour. So it can be a problem. So if you're buying flour that's kosher for Passover, sure, you can mix it in less than 18 minutes and bake it, then technically it'd be okay.
All right.
Okay, but how about if I buy pre-made corn taco shells?
I don't know what takes place in a manufacturing facility for me to say if it's kosher or not kosher. But anything that's made in less than – the concept is if water touches flour in 18 minutes, it begins the process of leavening, and therefore we make sure to always bake our products in less than that. Obviously, if you add in a different ingredient past water and flour, you add in a certain different juices or yeasts, it's going to speed that process up a lot quicker than 18 minutes.
All right. Hey, Mordecai, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551.
See, I thought he was asking a spiritual question. What's the difference between matzah and bread? But I turned out to be...
That'll be a long show, right?
Yeah, probably.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and we'll go to Alan in Beckett, Mass. Alan, you're on.
Hi, listening to your show, great show. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I have a daughter who's a vegetarian, and we don't have a problem with Passover. We just, you know, a lot of the dishes, as the rabbi said, you can go straight with, we make a vegetarian matzo ball soup. I have another daughter whose birthday usually falls out on Passover. We don't have it at the Seder, but for her birthday, my wife makes a lovely cheesecake using macaroons, crushed macaroons, for the base, for the cheesecake, and using, of course, you can get kosher cream cheese, and so there's a lot of options. If you go to Chabad.org, they have many recipes that are vegetarian. Also, if anybody needs shmorah matzah, as the rabbi was mentioning, you can call Chabad in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, 413-499-9899, and the Rabbi Volovic will be happy to deliver shmorah matzah to your listeners. So,
all right, well,
we don't have to go. We don't have to reinvent the wheel for Passover. We certainly can keep within what we're talking about in terms of keeping kosher for Passover. For my family, we eat fish and we eat a lot of fruits and vegetables that are kosher for Passover.
Hey, Alan, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number here on Vox Pop. Getting ready for Passover with Chef Brian Arnoff and Rabbi Henoch Hecht. What are you giving me? Uh-oh, we
gotta
dropped the fork.
You gotta taste some of the horseradish. Oh, see if it's true.
I love horseradish. You gonna make me cry?
Yeah, hopefully.
All right.
This is only plain, plain grated horseradish. Mm. And the other one, stuff on the left is haroset.
All right, let's give it a shot here.
And then Chef Brian brought some haroset, so you can taste and see which one is actually better. His definitely looks better than mine, but...
This my mom actually made for you.
Really?
Yeah, I had to rope her into this. She makes it for the family every year.
Weren't you going to bring your mom on the show next time?
Yeah.
You got to bring her next time. That's
we
got to
do a show about farming.
Now, this is very... I think this is very mild, Rabbi Hecht.
It could be.
Yeah. What do you... You haven't had it? What do you mean?
When I was grating it... It wasn't so mild, but by now maybe
it's delicious though. Yeah. It's sweet. It's beautiful.
You got to try the classic Passover sandwich where you take some of the haroset.
Oh, that's right.
And some of the horseradish and eat it on the matzah. What's that called, Rabbi?
It's called the Korach sandwich. I'm sorry. Yes, which was Hillel, who's an elder that took all the different foods of Passover and ate it together. And he called it Korach, which means to wrap together. And he wrapped together them. Today we don't do the Paschal lamb, but just the matzah, the maror, and the haroset together.
All right, I'll give it a shot here. Let's take a call, and then I can turn my mic off and chew. That's the tricky part of doing this program. Let's go over to Christine on the Thruway. Christine, you're on.
Yes, hi there. I'm just calling to let you know that you can have noodles in your chicken soup. We do, and it's gone back two or three generations in my husband's family. It's a family recipe for pesadilla noodles made with eggs and potato starch, and the family fights over those noodles.
Fantastic.
What do you think, Rabbi?
Sounds fantastic. You mean the picture online.
So I'm vindicated.
Yeah, the picture online was the Passover family secret recipe.
Thank you, Christine, for bailing me out there. I appreciate the call. Actually, our producer, Jim Lavula, says the picture's off.
Oh.
So, you know, we're saved. Let's go to Lorraine and Schoharie. Wow. Lorraine, you're on.
Hi. How are you doing? I'm hoping you can give me some tips on cooking brisket. Mine always comes out very tough. And in particular, I'm wondering if you pan sear it first before braising?
First of all, low and slow. Take your time. Don't rush the brisket. The longer you cook it for, the tenderer and moister it'll be. Typically, I don't bother to sear it before I braise it. I usually braise it about 6 hours covered, and then I uncover it. And at that point, some of the liquid is evaporated, so the top will then brown in the last hour. Then you could pull it out, cool it, slice it. And
you slice it cold or hot?
For the restaurant,
we've had
this
argument on this
program
before.
We always slice it cold. We chill it overnight in the liquid. That gives you the most moisture because the meat actually sucks some of the liquid back up as it cools. Slice it, and then we puree all of the braising liquids, and that turns out to be a really nice gravy. Mm. And
I agree with the chef. Searing it, number one, is just an extra step that's extra work. I don't think it really makes a difference. And if you want to cut nice slices... It's got to be cold.
It has to be cold. Yeah. Very interesting.
How low is your oven that you're talking about?
275 I usually do it at.
Oh, for 6 hours?
Yeah, depending on the size of the brisket and the piece that you have. I mean, we are usually cooking a whole brisket that's about 13 or 14 pounds.
Right. Okay. Right.
Well, Lorraine, thanks a lot.
I'll give it a whirl.
Good luck. 800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. We're joined today by Chef Brian Arnoff of Kitchen Sink Food and Drink in Beacon, New York, and Rabbi Henoch Hecht, who is the founder or co-founder of the Rhinebeck Jewish Center and has appeared on Food Network's Chopped. You're a little more relaxed now, aren't you?
Definitely.
Okay. See, it's very calm.
See, I just smell the champagne. Forget it.
That's all you need?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a cheap date. 800-348-2551. And you brought your son with you, and he's very well behaved. Actually, better behaved than most of the guests on this program.
Well, as I always tell him, he should come and embarrass me and behave.
You don't want to be on the mic? No? Okay. But you're enjoying yourself. All right. I made a sandwich during the last
call. He's taking notes, so when we go home on the car ride, he'll correct me with all the mistakes I made.
Tell you what you did wrong. So what is this on the left of the plate? Now, I tried the horseradish, and what is this?
On the Seder plate, the Seder night itself is all about reminiscing both the slavery as well as enjoying the freedom.
It's a lesson in a meal, correct?
You can say that, but it's more of a journey. It's a 15-step journey. Seder means order. It's the order of a journey that you're supposed to go through all these different experiences. One of the things the Jews did when they were 210 years in slavery is they made bricks, and mortar. To remind us of that, we eat something called charoset. So you'll have my charoset. I personally do not, maybe everybody says they should question my lineage, but I do not like charoset. So I made it for the show because I felt I have to make it, but I do not like it. But Chef Brian brought some in, and you can taste his. I'm sure his looks better.
It looks good.
Yeah. And essentially, it's nuts, apples, and wine or grape juice.
A little bit of cinnamon.
You could smell the cinnamon.
And I grated it. I like a pear, so I did some pear instead of full apples. And I don't want to say I don't like walnuts, but I rather almonds over walnuts. I did with almonds. I don't know what your mother does.
Walnuts.
Well, walnuts is more traditional. So
this is delicious. This really is good. I guess we should probably compare the two during the break. And
I'm sure his is better. It just looks better.
It looks really good. All right, what else do we have here today on the
So
menu?
We got some the chef brought some chicken soup.
Okay, now there are no noodles.
No noodles.
Okay. Matzo ball.
Oh, look at that.
A chicken consomme that we make from local chickens. And then we make a classic matzo ball.
It smells great.
And the little thing that we do different is we stuff it with an egg yolk so that you almost have the effect of like a egg drop soup once you cut into it. Hopefully, as you shove your spoon.
Do I have
there,
to eat the whole? I can't eat the whole thing.
Just cut into the middle.
All right, I'm gonna go right. I'm gonna go
now
right
let's
for the
see what
egg.
Happens.
Oh,
you know, this was
that.
A little microwaving magic here at the studio. So,
well, look at
hopefully
that.
It worked.
Well, it's
out
almost
right.
Over easy because of the microwave, but it's perfect. Oh gosh, look at that.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Isn't that
wow.
Nice? And there's something restorative about this soup.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, all chicken soup.
Absolutely.
It's
and
Jewish
I think
penicillin.
There is a scientific reason for it, and I forget what it is, but there's something, I think, in the fat, maybe, that is restorative. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. It is a Food Friday, and we're going to go over to Kermit here in Pittsfield in a moment. Let's see, is Kermit ready? Let's see. Nope.
Okay, it's not ready. We got gefilte fish.
Okay.
And
I don't know if I've ever tried this.
You've never had gefilte fish?
I don't think I have.
Well, there are many tales of where gefilte fish comes from, but I think basically they were too poor to serve a full piece of fish.
Yeah.
So they took fish and mixed it in with like matzo meal and carrots and onions, and that's essentially what this is. And on the side of it, I gave you the typical red horseradish.
Oh, which I love. Can I mix it together?
Yeah, which is basically horseradish beets. And most people put the horseradish on top.
Mm.
I eat it on the side. I don't like them mixing.
I like to mix it. Oh, that's very good. Oh, my gosh.
You know, I think a lot of people are afraid of gefilte fish. It's
Why?
Really just a fish meatloaf.
It's very mild.
Right, that's exactly what it is.
What else is in it?
It's basically different types of fish, usually white fish, sometimes carp. And actually, if for the environment now with the Asian carp that have taken over a lot. It's very,
yeah.
Very good for the environment to use carp. And then many times they use mullet. They, you know, grind it together, grind onions, carrots, and put some people put eggs. I mean, for the vegans, they'll skip the eggs. Well, vegans, they can't do the fish anyways.
Right.
But if they ate fish and were allergic to eggs, and then you have some type of matzo meal, although our Passover recipe, we do not put matzo meal in. We just the fish, the vegetables, and the egg.
So in preparing this, almost, as you say, a fish meatloaf. So you refrigerate it. How do you get it to be one happy piece?
Well, it's traditionally poached. So the gefilte fish is ground. And then if you were making it at home, you would take that mixture, wrap it in plastic wrap really tight, and then poach it in a liquid. You could also just bake it in a loaf pan like you would a meatloaf.
Yeah.
This is baked in a pan. But you're right. Most of the gefilte fish is poached.
And the horseradish is phenomenal. You make
that
yourself?
There's no kick to it. There's a nice kick.
Oh, no, that's good. No, it's good. Oh. Definitely. It's mild.
And this is with beets. No, it's not super strong, but this is with you cook the beets down and then some sugar.
And it looks beautiful. Yeah. And a nice presentation there, too. The carrot on the top.
Chef, how's the horseradish?
It's good. It's really good. It's making me thinking about making gefilte fish right now.
Well, fair enough. What do you have going on at the restaurant now, coming up?
Well, we're dying for spring to come around.
Oh God, you and me both.
But we just put this soup on the menu for this week and next week that we're running as a special.
Okay. Wow, what do we
call it? Do you call it a Passover soup special, or
we're just calling it the matzo ball soup special right now? Other than that, we have, in totally not kosher for Passover, we have an awesome scallop pie that we just put on the menu.
Well, that sounds good. All right, let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Kermit in Pittsfield. Now we got him. Kermit, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on.
So my question is more directed to the rabbi, with maybe some input from the chef.
Okay.
So I heard someone mention that they were thinking of opening up a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
And my training in conducting Seder has never included having champagne. So I've always questioned having wine at Seder, even though it's commanded, you know, it's a fermented product. And I'm wondering what kind of wine one might pair with your Seder meal, other than the standard Concord grape sweet wine.
And
so I'll hang up to listen.
Thanks, Kermit.
Any wine that's kosher for Passover, you can use at the Seder, excluding Manischewitz. Manischewitz is so bad that you're not
well,
allowed to use it.
Our legal department is going to be all over you for that.
I think everyone has to drink a glass of Manischewitz at the Seder. You know, it feels traditional. It's really not bad. It's actually kind of tasty, and the grapes grow locally.
Now, our legal department thanks you for that. Now, you got us out of a lawsuit. Well done, Rabbi.
It is true that Manischewitz grapes and a lot of the Concord wine grapes, which are the sweeter wines that's typically associated with kosher wine, is grown in New York State. There is a lot of kosher wine, New York State kosher wine, if you're looking for local.
Mm.
And technically, you could use champagne. I personally use red wine for my 4 cups of wine over Passover.
Mm.
There's a Kabbalistic reason for red wine specifically at the Seder. But if you want to do champagne and it's, you know, kosher for Passover, sure, enjoy.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. We will take a quick break here. It is Food Friday and the home stretch approacheth.
Support for WAMC comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now crafting black garlic and black garlic products in small batches. BlackGarlicSeaSalt.com for more information. Mango Tree Imports, a Saratoga Springs fair trade shop with gift items from 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorns Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, Harrells.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the Arkell Collection's Canada Lake Portraits, animal prints, drawings, and paintings by American artist Paul Bransum, ArkellMuseum.org. And Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts. Serving globally inspired, locally sourced cuisine, open for dinner Tuesday through Sunday at 5, BlueHeronDining.com.
Vox Pop, it's Food Friday with Ray Graff and you at 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Chef Brian Arnoff and Rabbi Henoch Hecht, and it looks like dessert here.
That's kugel, potato kugel.
Oh, I love it. Oh, okay, no sweet, savory, eh?
It's savory. Right. Although they do make sweet kugel, but it's kind of hard to make a Lakshin sweet kugel for Passover, though I'll probably be corrected by Christine to tell me that her grandmother also made a Lakshin kugel recipe, which can be.
This
just
is
probably
delicious.
A lot of work.
Now, what's in this?
A typical potato kugel is quite easy. It's almost like a potato latke just made into a pudding, I guess. Which is potatoes, onions, eggs, salt, pepper, oil. And this one I actually made with olive oil, 100% virgin olive oil. Just come around Passover, I know there's so much other things that aren't good for your heart.
That's really going to help all that much. Now, this email came in, and then we'll get back to the phones. The rabbi and chef missed the point that corn is not allowed on Passover. Corn is an ingredient in confectioner's sugar, so that is not allowed.
Well, corn, I think Chef Brian did mention this, that corn would fall under the category of kitniyot, of legumes. Mm-hmm. So if you eat that, then it's permitted on Passover. If you do not eat that, then it's not permitted. So it really depends on one's custom and one's tradition.
All right, fair enough. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. And Leah in Rhinebeck. Leah, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that that you're talking about Ashkenazic tradition. And I'm actually an Italian Jew, and so we have some different traditions. And one of the dishes that I've traditionally made is called skaki, and skaki is, I would say, it's sort of like a vegetable lasagna. And I always make it for my vegetarian guests. And if I don't have them, I include meat. But it is spring vegetables, so I usually use leeks and spinach and fresh peas, because in Italy you can eat peas, and artichokes. And then if it's not vegetarian, I put in small meatballs as well. And then you layer it with matzah that you've soaked and squeezed out. Some recipes call for a tomato ragu. I like to make mine all more green and lemony. And then it has, you can make a little egg custard to put on it. But if you're being kosher and you're having meat, then I don't do that.
That sounds amazing. I mean,
it does sound good.
Yeah, it sounds really, really good. And I guess your family tradition has that. Sounds great. And I did mention that Sephardic Jews, which technically originally from Spain, but technically the Middle Eastern Jews, what's known today, do eat all the legumes and the rices. And, of course, each person follows their own tradition, their own custom.
Yeah, I think
I will say, though, that in Rome, which is where my family is from, we are not Sephardim. The Jews in Rome it's the oldest extant Jewish community in the world outside of Jerusalem. And we have our own liturgy
tradition
and our own way of doing things. That's not actually Sephardic or Ashkenazic.
The main thing is you have to keep tradition alive.
And Leah, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Sue in Poughkeepsie. Sue, you're on.
Hi. Just another restrictive tradition for those who love restrictions. My mother's family was a Hasidic sect called Stolner. And their tradition was not to break matzah. In other words, not to use matzah for any other purpose than eating it. And everything else was, potatoes were used, very Ashkenazic, but there were no matzah balls in our soup on Pesach. So
you made up for it after Passover.
Not really.
Well, Sue, thanks a lot.
When it comes to Passover, there are every family and every community had their own customs, their own traditions, and I'm a believer that it's very important to stick to family traditions.
Right. I think, you know, one thing that we forget about is that, you know, in New York and really in this country, most of the Jews are from one small group of Judaism. There is a broad spectrum of different traditions out there, and you know, like the last caller was mentioning, in Italy and in the Middle East and in Africa, there's traditions that come from all around the world, and it's really interesting to see kind of how those food traditions merge together in this country.
Our number is 800-348-2551. We go to Ed in Schenectady. Ed, you're on.
Hi. I've been a vegetarian for over 45 years, and I've been Jewish for longer than that, but I only became religious about 20 or so years ago, and when I did, I talked to my rabbi about what should I eat, but I didn't have any Passover tradition. And after a lot of discussion, we went with the Sephardi tradition. In fact, one of my traditions is I always have a bean hard-shell corn taco on Passover. You know, because corn is not one of the forbidden grains. Beans are, as the rabbi said, yot and forbidden in Ashkenazi, but not in the Sephardi tradition. So there's a lot of things that people can do. And if you have a restrictive diet, health considerations.
Okay, I think we lost you there, Ed, but I think we get the drift.
Yeah, and I think that when you come into the kitchen Passover, once you take out the leavened products, you could pretty much do anything you do throughout the whole year and enjoy it.
Hmm. And I see some creativity here with us today, so I think your creativity is the limit. Yeah, Chef?
Yeah, and Passover for me is more about celebrating with my family.
That's right.
And, you know, recounting the stories and, you know, just enjoying the spirit of the holiday. I think, you know, the actual traditions that you follow exactly are maybe not as important, at least to me, as, you know, just the joy of being with our family.
That is true, and even more so when others join you and you have guests, they all bring a different twist to each Passover. I don't think two Passover Seders are alike, and everybody around the tables adds in and makes it a different spirit, so I think you're 100% correct.
Let's go over to Ray in Red Hook. Ray, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I'm not Jewish. I love Jewish food. I have a very famous neighbor that used to cook for me and has passed away, and there's still a widower there. You talked about horseradish. It's too early for me to dig up my horseradish to give as a gift. And I make vinegar, but it's not made kosher, I guess you would say. Can I give a gift? And is it proper to give a gift during Passover?
It is proper to give a gift if the typical norm is when you go to someone's home for a dinner to bring a gift. To bring something that's not kosher for Passover to Passover Seder, I don't recommend it. I think it's a little bit out of place, but of course.
Well, if I dug up horseradish and ground it, I would still have to do that in a kosher kitchen.
I don't know whose home you're going to, but if you're coming to my home, then the answer would be yes. If you're going to someone else's home, that it's not so observant. Each to their own.
Okay.
Ray, thanks a lot.
I just wanted to. Bye.
But a bottle of wine is always a safe bet.
Let's go to Vicki in Albany. Vicki, you're on.
Yes, you've been talking about noodles being not kosher.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
No, let me just finish. Monashevitz has put gluten-free noodles out for Passover. And I'll tell you the ingredients. They're tapioca starch, potato flakes, potato starch, egg whites, spices, turmeric, and paprika, and they have a wonderful, they have a very nice recipe for noodles, Mediterranean. I will add them to my salads and also to my, I'm also vegetarian, and I'll add them to my cooked vegetables.
It sounds delicious. I stand corrected. But just as a clarification, when I meant noodles, I meant the typical noodles that are made from flour. An egg.
Yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of noodles. I mean, I could make gnocchi for you that are definitely do not contain flour or gluten-free.
That's a great vegetarian something to make on Passover.
There you go.
Absolutely.
It's Vox Pop. It is Food Friday, as you may have guessed. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And Judy in Leverett, Mass. Judy, you're on.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I have a comment about corn. When I was going to Hebrew school, I learned that we don't eat corn on Passover because it wasn't even around in that area of the world. It was the Native Americans in the United States area who were growing maize. So that's why I have never used corn in Passover. Now, I have a question about matzo balls.
Okay.
My grandmother used to have matzo balls that had some kind of a filling. It was a sweet filling. My mother tried to make them, but I don't think she ever succeeded. And I would like to know how one does that and what that stuff was.
There's a chef. I think he passed away now. He was a German guy, taught at CIA. He was a dean there and lived in Rhinebeck. And he told me he has 84 recipes for matzo balls.
Wow.
And majority of them were all dessert. They're stuffed with cherries and then rolled in cinnamon and sugar and with ice cream. Who knows? So I'm sure.
No, this was for matzo ball soup. And it had, you know, it was kind of a brownish and it was powdery.
Was it possibly dates?
No, I don't think so.
Hmm. Well, this is a mystery. You stumped the band, Judy. Way
I mean,
to
I
go.
Would imagine, you know, seeing a matzo ball stuffed with some dried fruit. That's pretty traditional.
But in a soup?
Each to their own.
Okay. Well, Judy, thanks a lot. I don't think anyone
when
has
When you figure it out, you let us know.
On the next show. Perfect. And Judy will figure it out. Bob in Amherst is on. Bob.
Hi. Your guests missed the opportunity to explain why gefilte fish is called that. Because it means stuffed fish, because the traditional way of making it was not in plastic wrap or a baking dish, but in the fish skin itself. One would take the meat outside out of the fish or fishes, various kinds, grind it up, add whatever you added, and then put it back into the fish skin and cook it that way.
Okay, Rabbi?
You are correct. He is correct.
Bob, thank you very much for that one. And let's race over to Pittsburgh, New Hampshire. It's Sharon. Are you in New Hampshire?
Yes, sir, I am.
So great to have you on the line. You are on.
The last town in the United States and in New Hampshire before you hit Canada.
Fantastic. Well, nice. I assume you're listening online.
No, I'm listening on 90.7.
How the heck do we get that far up there? Well, listen, I don't want to know. I'm sure it's an FCC violation. But you're on the radio, so go ahead.
Well, my question is, we're having a mixed Easter dinner. Some of our friends that are coming over are Jewish, so we're making Jewish food. And we are Baptist, so we're going to have Baptist food, you know, regular Easter food. And I was told that this is very offensive to both religions. I would like your opinion on this, because I don't want to piss anybody off on Easter.
Oh, for Pete's sake. All right. This is how we speak in New Hampshire. It's okay. That one's all right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Okay, so we won't say that again, but it's still within the bounds. We're really getting the FCC upset today. All right, what do you think?
It certainly doesn't bother me. I'm known for mashing up Jewish food with non-traditional items. And, you know, I think, like I said before, it's about gathering people together around a table. You know, and maybe you could... You know, talk a little bit about
I would love
Easter,
to hear your thoughts on this, Rabbi.
My thoughts are, if you're inviting guests over to your home for dinner and they're going to leave upset, then why are you inviting them?
Well, you make a point.
Well, no.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, I hear you. I just didn't want to upset anybody in any religion. I don't want to get kicked out of my church because of what I've done or whatnot. And I don't know. The friends that are coming over have no problem with it. So well, I thought I was within the rights of God. To do this.
I think that if you're making food and inviting over guests, the people know what they're coming to. I don't see why it should be an issue. But, of course, those that follow the traditions will follow the traditions the way they want to follow them.
Sharon, thanks a lot for that. We appreciate your calling to some extent. Let's go to James in Pittsfield. James, you're on.
Yeah, hi. That year or two ago, I got invited to a Seder by a Jewish friend, and I'm a baker, and got curious about matzah. And did some searching and wound up making matzah for them. And turns out it's not much more than a pasta dough rolled thin, pricked, and cooked very rapidly in a very hot oven. And, you know, what's interesting for me is that the ancient rabbis, in their wisdom, decreed that there only 18 minutes could elapse between the touch of water to the flour and the final baking. Which just, you know, I took that as a challenge. I set a stopwatch and let it rip. And they came out quite good. My friends told me that they'd never had a matzah that they actually liked before.
Okay. Well, sounds wonderful. And I did run it by Chef Coppedge, who's the certified master baker at CIA, teaches at CIA. And he confirmed that basically at 18 or 19 minutes, once the water touches the flour, begins the chemical reaction. I guess it's cracking on the dough that will take place.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah. Well, James, thanks a lot for that one. We appreciate it.
Rabbi, when you make your fresh matzah, does it come out really crispy or does it come out a little soft? Because when I've made it before, it's come out a little softer than what's traditionally thought of as matzah.
Okay, so if you're making it in an oven that's not super hot, I make with my Hebrew school kids. We make matzah from scratch.
Yeah, that's the times I've made it was at Hebrew school when I was...
Right, so... My oven is, what, 400 or 500, and I buy those portable pizza ovens. They're 400 or 500 degrees. 400 or 500 degrees, you'll never get the crack on it like you do on regular matzah.
700 or 800 to do that?
This one's done well over probably 1,300-1,400 degrees.
Okay.
But I mean, if you do it even in a pizza oven that's 900 degrees, I think you could get that crack. But at a lower temperature, you'll never get it. It comes out softer, which is interesting. The Jews from Syria, the matzah they use is softer matzah, and I'm assuming because the recipe is the same and they practically do the same thing. It's just softer. It's almost like a laffa.
Yeah. And so that is considered acceptable, though. If it was made under supervision.
Technically, yes. I mean, I only eat the matzah, this type of matzah, but yeah, absolutely.
Well, where is the time gone? The show is now
over. Did you eat a macaroon?
I did. The macaroon's fantastic. What's in the middle?
Well, there's some chocolate chips, but a macaroon's made with coconut.
Delicious. No, I knew that, but I saw a chocolate chip in there. Wow, this was fun. Thanks so much to Rabbi Hanok Hecht and Brian Arnoff for being here. Brian, what's the website again?
KitchenSinkNY.com.
And do you have a website,
Rabbi? RhymeBeckJewishCenter.com if you need a place for Passover. You're invited.
Fantastic. Well, you guys, this was great. I appreciate it. Support comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, SpiritHAUS.com. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European and cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, VivaFreshPasta.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, now indoor season, featuring farm fresh produce and handmade goods every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside the Troy Atrium, TroyMarket.org. Sage Wine and Spirits, Ballston Spa, New York, providing worldwide sustainable, organic, and craft wines and spirits, offering weekly tastings. Wine and Spirits specialist available to advise, sagewinespirits.com. Thanks again to Rabbi Hecht and Brian Arnoff for being here today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. Phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be in on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday.